This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Cub Nation, it's Steve Kerr. You're listening to The Morning Roast with Vontae Hill and Joe Shasky on 95.7 The Game. You better hit those brakes, Vontae.
We've been hitting them, Steve, and no, it's not Vontae Hill. It's Joe Spadoni in for Vontae Hill alongside Sam Lubman, who's filling in for Joe Shasky. We've had a hell of a show, and we got this last segment before handing it off to Steiny and Goon next, but it'll be Evan Giddings filling in for Daryl DeGruy Johnson alongside Matt Steinmetz and Steve Kerr. We're going to hear from him in just a short time because he joined Will and Dibbs yesterday. It was Lorenzo Neal and Dan Devone filling in for Mark Willard and Dan Dibley, respectively. So we'll hear from Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, who will be without Stephen Curry tonight as they take on the Los Angeles Clippers. And you can have all that coverage right here on 95.7 The Game, your home for Golden State Warriors basketball. Warriors live starting at 6 o'clock. And then tip off with the voice of the Golden State Warriors at 7, live from La La Land. And be sure to tune in again for Warriors Live tonight, presented by Xfinity. Stream sports from the best seat in the house with Xfinity. Bring on the good stuff. And also be sure to download the Odyssey app, because you can listen to the Warriors game right there. And did you know this, Sam Lubman? The Odyssey app is free, and it's amazing. I mean, if you don't have the Odyssey app, I mean, what are you really doing? It's the Nintendo Switch. It's PS5. It's the Odyssey app. That's what you got to be having right now, all right? Like, the best Christmas gift I got in my stocking was an iPhone that had the Odyssey app downloaded on.
Yay!
There you go. I mean, do you need any more promotion than that, Odyssey? Than that right there? Come on! Give me a Christmas bonus, Ebenezer Scrooge over here. All right, without further ado, Steve Kerr, the head coach of your Golden State Warriors, joined Willard and Dibbs yesterday, Dan Devone and Lorenzo Neal filling in for Mark Willard and Dan Dibley. In the interview, started as such. We were talking about Stephen Curry's incredible performance on Christmas Day. Steve Kerr, your thoughts on it?
He's got such a sense of the moment and a flair for the show. You know, the fact that it's national TV on Christmas, that's going to step up for a game like that. And it didn't surprise me at all, especially as you mentioned, coming off a bad night, you know, a few nights before that. So this is a guy we've known for a long time. I mean, he's just an incredible performer and one of the greatest of all time for a reason.
Coach, when you think about the ones that you've been accustomed growing up and watching and being a part of, Berg and Magic, is LeBron and Steph equivalent to that type of game day Magic when you're thinking about what that meant and what NBA, you know, those two type of guys with that type of ilk?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I grew up, we're in Los Angeles right now. We're down here for the Clippers tomorrow night. And, you know, pulling into the hotel, I got a lot of memories of my childhood, you know, growing up rooting for Magic and watching the Lakers and the Celtics play in the finals. And those were amazing days, iconic days. And what we've seen from Steph and LeBron, particularly meeting in the finals four different times, you know, it's they are basically the Magic and Bird of their day, for sure. I mean, just not only brilliant, you know, all-time players, but charismatic and, you know, showmen. Everywhere they go, people are, you know, they're coming to the game to see those two. And that's pretty unique. And it's also unique to see the rivalry that, you know, turned into them being teammates this past summer in Paris, and for me to be there and observe that was just incredible.
No question, Coach. Coach, also just kind of looking at the state of basketball then, the viewership and watching, you know, where it's at now. What do you think is going on when you think about it, when the ratings are down, or, you know, what basketball is? Will it come back? How do you, you know, being a connoisseur and being a part of so many, you know, great franchises and being a part of this great franchise, what do you attribute it to, and do you see it coming back? What is the biggest thing in your opinion?
Well, I think ratings are down. You know, there's a lot more options these days than ever before. So I don't know that ratings are as important as they were 20 years ago. There's so many ways to consume the product and I know that, you know, there's proof there, right? The league just signed this massive rights deal. So it's not so much about TV ratings as it is about content. So I think the dynamics are much different on that front. As for the popularity of the game, I just think that the NBA has always been very cyclical, you know, and it often kind of rides the momentum of star players and superstar teams like the Lakers and Celtics in the 80s or the Bulls in the 90s, Warriors this last decade. So it's not a surprise that, you know, as Steph and LeBron and Kevin Durant and the current stars start to wind down, that, maybe the league takes a hit popularity-wise. But, you know, the next guys they'll be coming. And the game will survive quite well, I think. And there will be another uptick before too long. It's always been the way it's worked in the NBA.
Coach Kerr joins us on the River Islands guest line. And, Coach, all right. Take us in the huddle with 6.3 seconds to go. What was said to the team? And, well, you know, sports talk radio, sort of the nature of this beast, is that people want to point fingers. If there was a breakdown defensively, should there have been a help defender? Can you just walk us through the final 6.3 last night?
Well, you know the ball's going to go to LeBron. So we put our best switching lineup out there. We wanted to make sure we kept the ball from LeBron as best we could. And our guys did a good job of that. LeBron tried to get the ball up top. Steph jumped out. Steph was guarding the passer. He jumped out and took that pass away. And then, you know, Reeves was the guy who was open. Reeves made a hell of a move. You know, those are tough plays. Wiggs tried to stay in front. And I think, you know, Reeves had a big game and made some threes, so Wiggs wanted to press up on him, and he made a hell of a play. He got to the baseline and got right to the rim.
Was Wiggins, do you think, was he expecting help at the rim? It looks as though, and Reeves is, look, for those that aren't familiar with Austin Reeves, he can do that. He can get to the rack, yeah. But was there, I guess if you were to replay this the day after, was there any sort of notion to maybe give him a tough sort of mid-range, or was the idea to get up on him, and should there have been a help defender, maybe somebody to meet him on the baseline?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we teach all the time is send baseline. We never want someone driving middle, because when you drive middle, you have the whole floor, and now there are way more options in terms of passing and spacing. So we always send sideline. So Wiggs got him going in the right direction. And again, Reeves made a hell of a play. He got there quickly. It was a tough loss based on the fact that we battled back. We had our chances, but just couldn't get the stop at the end.
I hate to single anybody out, but was Jonathan Kuminga the guy that maybe, because he looked, just looking at him replays, he was watching, I believe, Hachimura, was he the guy that maybe if there was somebody that could have helped at the baseline, that it should have been him to close out on Reeves?
There's hell, we talk about help defense all the time, and that's all part of it, you know, and the game happens quickly, and it's a game of reactions and decisions, and so you work on all these schemes, you work on, you know, the different scenarios that are coming up, and you try to execute them, and sometimes they sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and you just go from there.
Hey, Coach, that's what old Marty Schottenheimer used to tell us. Hey, sometimes you get the bear, sometimes the bear gets you. And I know you as a coach, you know the deal, and you can't necessarily call people out. And that's just, you know, behind closed doors, you do what you need to do as a coach. When you see a players-only meeting, was that called by Steph and Dre? And what are those usually, in your opinion, good for? And what do you think the notion of that for?
Yeah, I guess that was mentioned in the media last night, maybe after the game. I don't know exactly how that came about, but you know, anytime you have those types of meetings, they're meant to be private. So when stuff comes out, it's not ideal, but it's also not something that I'm going to spend a whole lot of time talking about, because those are private conversations and, sure, and things that the team deals with. But it's not unusual. You know, I mean, teams across the league periodically through the year meet, especially if you've lost 11 out of 14 like we have. And that was what the guys did.
Coach Steve Kerr joining us on the River Island guest line. And Coach, you know, after the hot start at 12-3, it looked as though you guys were hanging your hat clearly with defense and doing it. It was almost like hockey line shifts. You had these 12 or 13 guys that would come in with this energy and just suffocating and blitzing guys. And now when you look at the team defensively, it's sort of lacking that. And you know this low as well as anybody, that defense is one of those things that it's sort of an intangible, right? It's buy-in. They use words like want to. I'm just curious, Coach, how do you, as a coach, what is it that you say? Is there anything that you can do to sort of bring back that energy that was clearly the identity of the team in the first month of the season?
Yeah, I think more than anything, it's just a confidence issue. You know, we had a great vibe early and things were rolling along and we're playing a million people. And, you know, when you're winning, that's a good thing. You know, that's when you're playing all those people and you're winning, everyone's happy. But as soon as you start losing, then playing 12 people becomes problematic. And that's basically what happened. We started losing and we decided we had to counter that, and we had to get back, cut back to 9 or 10. And unfortunately, that hasn't resolved our slide either. So we're scrambling right now, but our defense definitely is not as energetic. I think it's a confidence thing more than anything. We've got to find our groove again. And, you know, if we can stay with it and get through this difficult stretch, I know our defense is strong. I mean, we're a third of the way through the season. We're a top 10 defense, so we know it's real, but we've got to find that confidence that leads to energy and force for sure.
Coach, just to stay with the defense for a second, a guy that fascinates me is Brandon Pajemski, because he's played much better offensively of late, but simply he's had a hard time of it. I think he's sort of in his own head, and I think the offense will come around, but the one thing about this guy is that he may miss five shots in a row, but rest assured he is going to turn his butt and get back defensively, either take that charge, snare a rebound, or get out on a guy. So it does not – he's one of those guys where it doesn't affect his defensive play, and maybe he understands that that's how he's going to get run, is that he's got to be a guy that's buying in defensively. But I just sort of wanted to compare and contrast that to Jonathan Kuminga, who is so raw in terms of the athleticism, is so nasty. And that dunk he had where he just lowered his shoulder last night on Christie is, I mean, that's what it is that this guy can do. But it seems as though at times defensively he can sometimes, he doesn't have the same energy maybe as he does on offense. He seems to be a bit, maybe for lack of a better word, confused on rotations and not as communicative and not as loud as maybe he should be. And not to single out Jonathan Kuminga, but just as a coach, because you see guys who will improve as young players. He's only 22 at the end of the day. And guys offensively, you know, they learn to shoot threes or different facets of their game where they get better. But how difficult is it for a young player, and can you cite examples, to get better defensively? Does there have to be, does that light go on at some point that they understand that there's a necessity on that part of the floor that maybe they didn't address early on in their career? Or is it just sort of a DNA thing that you either have it or you don't?
Every player is different, you know, and we get players at different stages of their careers, different experience levels. The modern player generally does not have nearly as much of a fundamental base as the guys even from Dre and Steph's generation, because most of these guys are coming in with very little college experience. And so it's a different deal these days in the NBA. We're doing the job that frankly the college coaches used to do for us. It's tricky because you don't have much practice time, and you don't have the same level of control as a college coach does. And so I think what's interesting for us is you just get a sense of where each guy is when he gets here, how much he needs, how much teaching he needs, what he needs to work on. But they're all different, and I think a lot of basketball is just kind of innate. I think players, you see players who have feel. You see guys who have a really good sense for the game, what's happening on the floor. See other guys who maybe don't, and those are the guys who need more teaching, more prep. And it's all based on each individual, and that's our job as coaches to bring them all along, regardless of their experience.
Coach, how many championships you won as a player and as a coach?
5 as a player, 4 as a coach.
Okay, I asked that question because people are like, where are you going with this low? You won. You have talent. Steph, Clay, and all the boys were together. We know that you won championships. You understand how to win championships. You've done it as a player. You've done it as a coach. How frustrated is that times when people question and you're like, I know how to do this. I've done it on every level. Give me the talent. Give me those things. And I can win championships. How frustrating at times when people ask the questions and, question, what you're doing and the reason why you're doing it. And how hard is it to answer those questions without necessarily going too deep?
Well, I think that's the job, especially these days. And I tell our players all the time, I mean, that's why we get paid, that's why we live the lives that we do. I mean, if we didn't want to deal with the criticism, we could go coach at a different level really easily, and not have to deal with the spotlight. I enjoy the spotlight. I enjoy the competition at the highest level with everybody watching. To me, that gets me going. But I also embrace the fact that part of that means that there's going to be a ton of criticism, and because so many people are watching and so many people are interested. So I never take it personally. I know how hard it is. I know. I think basketball is more art than science. I think building a team is more art than science. And I've been on great teams. I've been lucky enough to be part of great teams. And there's no one formula that makes it work. But when it clicks, you know it. You can feel it. And so that's always my goal as a coach, is to help a team click and find that space where it's just beautiful to watch and to see and to experience when everybody is just on the same page and all trying to do one thing, and that's win a game. And the fans feel that. Everybody feels that. That's always the goal, and it's just a lot harder to get there than people think.
Coach Kerr joins us tonight. Hey, Coach, I don't know if there might be a stat for this. I don't know, although they got a stat for everything these days in the NBA. But in terms of you being effective ATO after a timeout and designing those plays, especially in the closing moments, I mean, I can't think of a coach who does it more effectively than you. But just take us again in the huddle. On those two timeout plays you drew up last night for Steph, beginning with the 1 and the 3, which was ridiculous because his release point, I don't know where he shot that thing from. But can you just sort of take us through those two? What it is that you designed to bring them within one and then to tie the game?
Well, some of the plays that you run are plays that you have installed already that the players can run on the fly. So the baseline one, the one you mentioned where Steph just hit that crazy corner three, That's just a late clock out of bounds underneath play that we have. So we practice it, you know, once a week or so. And if you don't have a timeout and you need to run something, you've got a handful of those. And then the other ones, when you take a timeout, those tend to be more specialized. You probably wouldn't be able to run it on the fly. Maybe you practice it, or maybe you just draw it up and trust the guys to run it. But I find that NBA coaches in general are really talented with this stuff, much more so than when I played. I think the stuff that people run late game is much more creative than it's ever been. And the shooting that we have in the league now is just insane. And so if you can put five guys on the floor who can all shoot threes, it just opens up the floor, and it allows coaches to draw up a lot of really interesting stuff. And, those are fun plays when they click. And then when they don't, it's really humbling. So it's all, you know, kind of all part of that late game stuff.
Coach, really quick, you know, Lorenzo Neal, who I love, but he's peeking at Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, first time around. It's on one of the monitors in the studio here, and it's at Madison Square Garden. Any thoughts on Frazier Ali, first time around at the Garden when Frazier knocked him down? Did you have any recall?
Well, I mean, what was I, like four? I mean,
that was, what was it?
That was 70s, man. I watched it replay. I never watched it live. Okay. I was born in 70. Me and Coach, come on, don't, you trying to make us out to be dinosaurs.
I remember the iconic shot of Ollie standing over Frazier. That was a still photograph. I don't know if that was the same fight we're talking about.
No, that's over Liston. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Oh, that was Liston.
Where he's standing crazy. Over him. Yeah. Right.
Standing over him.
See, my grandpa, Coach, he was friggin' Oliver. We watched fights. I had to watch fights with him every night, every day. So I loved boxing back in the day. Never did it, but I loved it.
Yeah. You were wrestling. Really good.
I was never a huge boxing fan, but I do remember when Ali went rope-a-dope against George Foreman.
Zaire.
Yeah. I still use that term every once in a while with our coaching staff. You know, we could just go rope-a-dope for a while and then
survive.
And the younger coaches are like, "What the hell are you talking about?"
You know, there was a great writer who wrote for, I believe, the Times, and he had this great description. I'm going to butcher it, but he said it was like watching somebody lean out of their window and check on their drains, their range. You know, on the roof has the drainage.
And
he had that, because if you remember, Ali was just
leaning on the ropes.
But he had that back bend while, you know, George Foreman obviously was punching himself out. But did you have a follow-up?
That was what Coach was saying. He's saying, hey, his team, hey, let's just rope-a-dope. Let's take all these punches, body shots, and last quarter we'll find a way to win it like you almost did last night, Coach. I got you. We're gonna make this work.
Coach, really quick, you're holding out Steph on the front end of the back-to-back tomorrow night. Is that a trend? You guys will continue and talk about Draymond being questionable as well.
Well, Steph, you know, he's had the knee issue, and our training staff a couple weeks ago when the knee issue started, we really wanted to make sure we stayed in front of it. And part of staying in front of it is not playing him in the back-to-backs, both ends for now. And so hopefully that helps him get out of the woods. But, yeah, he'll sit tomorrow, and he'll be ready to play against Phoenix.
Hey, Coach, we really appreciate the time. Oh, I'm sorry. They just blew my ear. They want to hear about Draymond. Any update on Draymond?
Yeah, no update on Draymond, but, you know, similar, just given the mileage Draymond has on him and him being banged up. He hurt his back a little bit last night. He fell pretty hard on the floor. You know, periodically through the year, we're gonna have to give both those guys some nights off. And so tomorrow could be that night for Draymond, too. We'll see.
And that was Steve Kerr yesterday right here on 95.7 The Game. You can find, again, if you missed that interview, or you just picked up the last couple minutes of it, find it on the free Odyssey app or on YouTube where we post all of our interviews. We also had Nick Friedel, our Odyssey NBA insider, join us earlier. Find that entire interview on YouTube or the free Odyssey app. Sam Lubman, we got about 10 minutes to go here before we hit our final thoughts of the show. like a year in review, if you will.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, sure. You know what? Some of your top moments, your sports moments of this past year, Sam Lovin. We can dive into it. There's been a lot. You could go to the 49ers making the Super Bowl. Right, that game.
That was probably one of the high moments of the year in Bay Area sports.
Absolutely.
It was kind of a dismal year in Bay Area sports this year, if we're being real. Like, the Warriors just continue to underwhelm.
Backlund Celebrini on line
one. Well, no, I'm going to get there. Hold on. The Niners, obviously, the Super Bowl hangover has been the dominating story of the year. The Giants, they got better at the end after they moved off of Farhan Zaidi, but it was still a summer of pulling teeth, so to speak, watching this team and it gets to the point where, Macklin Celebrini and the Sharks, they're ending the year as top dog right now in the Bay Area in terms of just the overall excitement factor. And even still, though, it's just hockey in the Bay Area is just only going to be so big for the time being. I mean, the Sharks were once, one of the best teams in the NHL, and that still, it felt like there was a hard cap in terms of the excitement level here in the Bay Area. That's to say there isn't excitement. You know, there are a lot of passionate Sharks fans out there, but it does not resonate in the same way as, the Warriors, Giants, and Niners do.
That's a fact. I don't think California will ever embrace hockey that much. I know that LA has got their Kings and stuff like that, but
the Kings and Ducks were big down there for a little bit.
It's a cult following, I still say, with hockey and stuff like that. It's just never going to be the rivals of Canada or the East Coast where it actually snows. I think there's just a big part of that. Minneapolis, if you will. New York, stuff like that. But I do like, it's fun for me to go to hockey games and Shark games too, because if you have like kids and stuff like that, like they enjoy that stuff a lot. Like going to games like that as a family, as a father of two now, like I enjoy going to hockey games because you get the best of both worlds. It's fast paced. It's fun. You got heavy hitting and it's not too much for the kids. Like, if I go to a baseball game, and this is part of it why the television product, they've sped it up, and I get it. A baseball game, you're not taking a 5 or 6 or 7 year old. Like, you're getting a little older, you're taking them, and they could have some more fun and stuff like that. Yeah, you can do the slide out at Oracle Park. You can do stuff like that. But
it does so much.
It can only do so much. When I have a 5-year-old, it's basketball or it's hockey. Football, even, for that matter. There's too much, like, in between there. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. There's a lot happening. And the crowds are a little too rowdy for my taste, depending on where you're sitting.
Getting to football games is also, like, getting to Niner games, it's its own ordeal as well. I'm fortunate here in 95.7 The Game. I just call up Lucas Alexander, our director of sports, and
wow,
say, Lucas, give me a parking pass now. And then I hang up and don't let him respond. And then a parking pass appears in my email.
Wow.
That's not at all how I do it. I do ask politely. But for a lot of people, it's frustrating getting in out of those games. I feel like that may depress the desire to go as well. But no, you're talking about great moments from this year, Spadoni. A couple do pop out. Number one, for me, honestly, it's the ladybug catch from the Brandon Ayuk in the NFC title game. That was one of those plays. Like, well, first off, there's the first failed fourth down conversion that the Lions had, and I remember I was sitting next to Alan Stiles, now up with Sacktown Sports. Are they 1320? Is that one?
No, Alan Stiles is Sacktown Sports.
Yeah, Sacktown Sports. What's their
1140.
1140, okay. Pardon me for my lack of Sacramento radio knowledge there.
You got to get on their level, dude. Big loss yesterday.
Capital Quarter.
Kings are 13-18. It's not a good time right now for them.
Yeah, but I was sitting next to Alan Stiles, and I just remember turning to him at that moment. It's like, Niners are about to come back and win this game. And they were down 24-7 at the time. And when Brandon Ayuk made that catch, I love all the pictures of that catch, because it shows a ball bouncing off of the Lions defender's hands. And it's just so awesome, because like you're looking at this picture of the ball basically being in the Lions defender's hands, and it's like, yeah, that was a catch by Brandon Ayuk. Mm-hmm. It was just one of the most insane catches. That was such a great moment to witness in person. Another great moment this year is probably Blake Snell's no-hitter, which has lost a lot of luster this off season, but that was a pretty big moment. I remember I got to do the show the next morning. It was a Friday night, so Evan and I, Evan Giddings, will be on with Steiny in just a few minutes. We did the show the next morning. That was really cool to be able to talk about that. But another big moment was probably Steph's Olympic three-pointer to bring gold home to Team USA.
That's a good one.
So those are three notable ones that jump out for me. Spadone, what about you?
How could you not go? And we could do a national as well, and I'm sure I'm going to get some hard feelings here, but I mean, it's probably the biggest play in sports this season, right? It's the Freddie Freeman walk-off home run against the Yankees.
I remember that happening.
Yeah, no, that was a big one. It was the biggest one probably in sport. Like, that changed everything. The Yankees were primed to take it. Was that game one?
It was game one.
Game one. Joe Davis on the
call.
From
what I've heard, I still don't remember.
Joe Davis on the call, obviously, and he calls Dodgers games in the regular season. So for him to do that, obviously down to their last out, down to the last batter, reminiscent of game one in the 1988 World Series when it was Dennis Eckersley, and a lot different than Nestor Cortez, if we're being real, going up against Kirk Gibson. But obviously, Kirk Gibson, MVP winner. Freddie Freeman, an MVP winner. And obviously, the biggest home run since 1988 in Dodgers history. So, obviously, they end up going on to win the World Series. Shohei gets his ring. Mookie Betts gets another. Freddie Freeman gets another. And the rest is history. Now the Dodgers are primed to go back-to-back after they add Blake Snell in free agency. The guy who had...
Shohei putting that big money down on that repeat.
That's right. Hey, you know what? Hey, he's going to defer it, too. How do you like that?
There you go. So great that, you know, the best player in baseball can get away with basically whatever he wants to do as he illegally bets on games and alters the outcome in favor for himself.
That's clearly what's going on. Show me the evidence.
I would, but, you know, our friends at the FBI probably burnt it all, so.
Oh, so I didn't know it was in the FBI.
It's a whole conspiracy. Yeah. Oh, no, the CIA has already gotten rid of it.
The CIA.
That and the evidence to JFK, it's all gone.
You're going to bring S.H.I.E.L.D. into this in a second with Nick
Fury. There you go. Captain America is hard at work trying to uncover the Hydra cell within S.H.I.E.L.D. that is protecting Shohei Ohtani.
That's good. No, that's good. I actually am picturing we're doing a crossover now of Shohei Ohtani as a Marvel villain. He's working for
basically,
Hydra.
Yeah, he's like Thanos, but he doesn't have all the stones yet.
Okay, fair enough.
So
there you go.
He's working on it, and, ugh, God.
888-957-9570, year in review time. Best sports moment of the year is what? 888-957-9570. We'll have time to dive into this more next week as well when we actually have our New Year's Eve show, which I will be a part of. We'll see if Sam Lohman will be a part of that.
Yeah. Baldy will be a part of that one, too.
Brian Baldinger,
the morning after Niners-Lions, so we can talk about that as well. I guess if we're going to get out of here on notable sports moments of the year, Spadoni, and this is notable, but for probably all the wrong reasons, You know where this is going. It is the final day at the Coliseum.
Yeah, but it was cool, right?
It was really an awesome atmosphere. It was like a greatest hits of A's fandom. I think my favorite part of that whole day was, you know, when they're doing the mascot, the Legends race of Eck, Ricky, rest in peace to Ricky Henderson, Obviously another devastating loss.
I mean, Ricky throwing out the first pitch to his daughter, right?
Mm-hmm. But they're doing that while they're playing the Grant Balfour's entrance song.
Rage.
So you got everyone, I'm out in right field at the time, all the drummers, they're doing the Balfour Rage thing. I'm looking over and I got, you know, the big mascots are running at us. I'm like, this was A's baseball. Like, thank you, John Fisher and Rob Manfred, for taking this great thing away from this fan base that, contrary to the false narrative that those two like to peddle, that fan base does care. And it just, this is, I'll rail against Rob Manfred for many reasons as to why he's the worst thing to ever happen to baseball. What he has sat here and done and allowed to have happen to the Oakland A's fans in this market is absolutely disgusting. And no one should ever say anything positive about Rob Manfred ever, unless you're just shilling for him like all of his pets in the media love to do. I have started to get so, you know, angry there, but that was, yeah, he's hammered drunk at the World Series. Shows you how good of a commissioner he is. Just get rid of him right now. My God, what I would give to just have Bud Selig back.
Well, he's stepping down.
Yeah, in 5 years. God knows what kind of damage he can do in that time. He's going to put like a 10-second pitch clock then.
You love the pitch clock.
Worst thing to have. No, it's not the worst thing to happen to baseball. It's not the worst thing to happen to baseball because there's so many other awful things that Rob Manfred's done.
Just wait till the magic at bat. Just wait till that.
Yeah, let's just completely bastardize the sport. Whatever. Nothing matters anymore going into 2025. I mean, like, God, just look around. Nothing. We're not a serious country anymore. But this all distracts from what was still a very great day at the Coliseum.
Mason Miller with the save. Yeah.
You get the save. The A's got the win. He got the play, you know, cooling the gang one last time. And it's just, it sucks that how it ended. But A's fans went out probably about as well as they could have. And hats off to all the A's fans out there, because you guys deserve so much better than what was unfortunately shoved down your throat.
Just sell and just fire everybody.
Fast Five time.
Hold on, I gotta find the page.
I did a Bonte Hill. I did a Bonte Hill that he does
five.
To me.
It's there time for the Xfinity Fast Five. Your last chance to get in on the morning roast. Brought to you by Xfinity. Supercharge your home with supersonic Wi-Fi. Unbeatable internet. Only from Xfinity.
All right, I got the news here somewhere as I drop my phone. It's time for the Xfinity Fast Five, where we give our final thoughts on the show. Brought to you by the Next Generation 10G Network. Only from Xfinity, the future starts now. Sam Lubman.
My final thought is, can we not get embarrassed in the Pop-Tarts Bowl tomorrow? I want to see my Miami Hurricanes eat a living Pop-Tart or whoever they do it. It's the whole set. First
a living Pop-Tart.
When it comes to bowl games, I don't think there's a bowl game out there that gets it as better, that gets it as well as the Pop-Tarts Bowl. They know what they are. They know it's supposed to be just a goofy show where a team tries to win a football game. I cannot wait to see the big Pop-Tart lowered into the giant toaster, and then the giant edible one comes out, and I get to see Cam Ward, Jacoby George, and, you know, Kiko Maui Noah just chomp on that thing afterwards. And the best part is, I can't wait to see the Pop-Tart Bowl trophy toast actual Pop-Tarts. You saw that, right? How the trophy is a working toaster. So very excited to see how that. They're calling it one of the 45 most anticipated seconds in college football. The 45 seconds it'll take to toast those Pop-Tarts.
See, so. I was not a big toasted Pop-Tart guy. I just liked it straight out of the package, a little cold. Mm-hmm. That was fine by me. What's your go-to? I'm an OG strawberry guy, personally. Ooh. With the frosted, with the little sprinkles on it. Big strawberry guy there. Wasn't mad at the s'mores. Not mad at the chocolate, but I was more of the strawberry. What? If you had to take one Pop-Tart, Sam, above the rest, you're taking blueberry? What are you taking?
Well, there's a lot of great ones. Obviously, blueberry, strawberry, very good. S'mores, I kind of lost a lot of. A great Pop-Tart flavor
with
once upon a time.
Fudge brownie as well.
The hot fudge sundae.
Yeah, okay.
That was an elite one there.
There you go.
Obviously, the cinnamon roll one was always a very good one for what you're talking to a guy who used
to eat
Pop-Tarts.
Oh, the brown sugar as well. I forgot about that. Don't sleep on the brown sugar
the
one.
The best Pop-Tart flavor, in my opinion, it's the blueberry muffin Pop-Tart.
Ooh.
Yeah, especially if you toast it. Ooh, that one hits so hard. And it's so, that's the one I would go to, is the blueberry muffin of all the Pop-Tarts. And I've eaten a lot of Pop-Tarts.
You got to go. And then you have to go Pop-Tart brand, because if you start going the off brands, there's not enough icing, there's too much breading. You know, we weren't the rich family. I had the toaster strudel. Like, those were the rich kids, got the toaster strudels, stuff like that, the separate frosting and what have you. But my final thought is this. Don't lose tonight, Golden State Warriors. Do not lose tonight.
Bad
you lose
news.
Tonight, you're back to 500, and all those good vibes, and they might have already gone out the window, but they're going to for sure be out the window if you lose tonight in La La Land to Los Angeles Clippers. Coverage of that starts at 6 o'clock right here on 95.7 The Game, your home for Golden State Warriors basketball. Warriors live there. And tip off at 7 with the voice of the Golden State Warriors, Tim Roy.
I think it's 7:30, actually.
Oh, 7:30?
Yeah, the Clippers like those late starts.
I'm seeing it right now. Let me look up. Warriors, Clippers.
I got it right here in front of me.
7 o'clock.
Oh, it is 7. Okay. Our schedule has 7:30. Okay. Oh. Our schedule's wrong.
The more you know. All right. I blame Adam Silver for that. Like,
there you go.
Rob
I blame Rob Manfred. Everything's
okay.
His fault.
Why not? That was the Fast Five, brought to you by Xfinity. At home or on the go, you'll get the fastest internet to all of your devices. And what's coming up next? Well, that would be Matt Steinmetz and Evan Giddings. It's Steiny a Guru, Evan filling in for Goo, on 95.7 The Game.